must please do so privately.
If you are going to smoke, we ask that you please be away from any buildings. Also, we ask that you refrain from smoking e-cigarettes inside the building. If you find it necessary to smoke, please take it outside, and please be respectful as we are guests of the church. And the first speaker of tonight is Ronnie.
Oh man, my name's Ron, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date's April 11th, 2016. It's good I'm up here and I'm 9 months sober and my mom's here tonight to see me pick up my shit. Well, I was born in Jersey. I moved down to Florida when I was in second grade, and during school, I played sports. That was my thing. That was my safe zone. That's where I came alive. I did that all throughout high school, and I was a pretty decent kid in school. Got good grades, all that stuff, but I always felt a little socially awkward. Couldn't talk in a classroom full of like 20 kids, and now I'm up here speaking in front of 100 people. Yeah, I almost failed my senior year because I couldn't do my senior project. I made it all up. I said I was coaching a flag football team, and I just bullcrapped the whole thing. I didn't coach no team. I couldn't get up in front of the class to present my project, but I think the teacher might have felt bad for me and passed me anyway. Let's see, I didn't have my first drink until I was a senior in high school. I remember the night my mom actually bought me the alcohol. No, but she wanted us to drink at home because she wanted me to be safe while I was drinking, so it was okay to drink at my house. At least that's how I took it. And the first time we each had a Smirnoff Ice 32-ounce, and I'm carrying the brown bag out of the car, and the bag breaks and two of the bottles broke. So I should have probably took that as a sign to not drink. But we went and got some more, and I had the most amazing night. I mean, the feeling when I drank that whole bottle and I just passed out on the couch, and it was great. I couldn't wait to do it again. And we ended up drinking and partying at my house every weekend. And then, you know, I planned on going to college, and I went to SBC, signed up, and took the placement test, but they wanted me to fill out this FAFSA form for money for college, and I just never did it, and I never went. I got a job, and I just started paying rent, and I was able to drink and smoke pot the way I wanted to, and I did that for a little while. I started drinking when I was 17, and I got into other drugs, and it got pretty bad pretty fast. So I think I was 22 the first time I went to rehab. I think I was homeless at the time because I was probably stealing from my family. I've been coming in and out of these rooms since I was like 23. For 5 or 6 years now, and I was the guy that would come to the noon meeting and sleep at the meeting because I had nowhere to go, bum cigarettes off of people. I actually, coming off a run, would slept on a couch at this meeting because I was up for like 3 days straight, and I think one of these guys right here took a picture of me, passed out on the couch. But, you know, I had a little bit of sobriety before. The second time I got out of rehab, I managed to stay sober for 11 months. And, you know, I did these steps, but there was something missing, and I ended up drinking again. On the way to go get it, I'm like, I know I shouldn't be doing this. I know what's going to happen, but, you know, every time, like, I got to the point where I'd always end up homeless or in jail or in rehab or something like that, and I knew where it was going to lead me. I knew what was going to happen, and I picked it up anyway, and it ended up happening. It was worse. It always gets worse. And I don't know. I wanted to come back eventually. It took me a little while to try to come back because it was working for a little bit, you know. You know, it was hard to come back here and you know, but I kept on showing my face, and you know, I'd show my face for maybe a month or two, or not 2 months, but maybe maybe a month or so. But I just couldn't get it. I didn't know what I was doing wrong. I had five sponsors in here that I've had in the past, and you know, I always tried working the steps, but I don't know. I was in jail. I was just coming out of jail this time last year, but the year before that I was in jail 6 months and 5 months. So I did like 9 months in 2014 in jail, and I came right to a meeting out of jail, and I made it to 3 meetings, but after this, my home group meeting, I was going to the hotel and do what I wanted to do. And every time I start to do something right, it'll always crumbles. Like, I get a job and get some money, then I'm out the door. I get back into my mom's house because she always lets me come back. Came out of jail and I was coming to meetings to make it look like I was doing good, and I don't come home for like 5 days, and I come crawling back to mom. She's like, get out of here, you know? She don't know what to do with me, and these guys try helping me, and I just can't get it. I'm trying to get in. This last time I get out of jail, I went straight to what I want to do, and oh man, 2 minutes already? I don't know, I was trying to get into detox. I'm running around up for 3 days, and I'm out of my mind, delusional, and I see my sponsor now. And he was the third person that, in like 2 days, to tell me to Baker Act myself. So I was like, I thought someone told him to say that, but you know, I get into this halfway house, and I start doing good again, start doing the steps, and 2 weeks into, I feel good, I'm doing good, and my mind comes back to me, and I pick back up. I get kicked out of the halfway house, end up getting Baker Acted again, and they let me come back into the halfway house, and I still got high when I went back there. I mean, but I was on the spiritual retreat. I wrote my fourth step in like 2 hours, and I was maybe 8 hours sober. But the next day I got honest and told my sponsor that I messed up again since I got back. And he's like, that's all right, man. Well, let's just do this thing. And, you know, I did my fourth step. Did my fifth step. I was brutally honest, told him everything. And I was like 3 days sober, and, you know, I don't know, it's something just happened. Like, he told me to get on my knees and pray, and like, I never did that before. So I started doing it every night and every morning. And after that fifth step, I actually sat for an whole hour and had a conversation with me and God. And you know, I started seeing God work in my life real quick. I'm making amends, 9 months sober, a week sober, making amends, and you know, I see this kid at a gas station, and I'm just ducking down, and I'm working with my sponsor, and he's like, I think I owe that guy an amends from like 7 years ago. It's like $100, and I went to go pay him the $100, and he told me to keep the money, and you know, I've been seeing miracles every day happen. Like, I'm living proof of that, and if I can do it, I mean, any one of you guys can do it. Seriously, I thought I was gonna die out there, but thank you for letting me speak.
And Chelsea will be coming up to do the traditions.
Chelsea!
Yay!
My name's Chelsea. I'm an alcoholic. Okay. 12 traditions of Alcoholics Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on AA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3. The only requirement for AA membership is the desire to stop drinking. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups for AA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6. An AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
And Tori will be coming up to give out the chips.
Tori.
All right, I'm Tori and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Tori.
Here on the west coast of Florida, we have chips to denote lengths of sobriety. The first chip we offer is the 24-hour chip for anybody new or coming back and wants to give up this way of life. All right, and that's Bill.
Hey, Bill.
All right, we have a red chip for 1 month, 30 days. That's Brandon and Mark with 1 month.
Yeah.
All right, and we have a gold one for 2 months. A green one for 3 months. A blue one for 6 months. Purple one for 9 months.
Yeah.
That's Ronnie, 9 months. I guess this is for 1 year, this black one. Flip it over for multiples. All right, and if you haven't had a drink today, give yourself a new higher power, Andy.
If you could please silence your cell phones. Wait, no. Sorry, I'm so sorry. Our second speaker will be Mark from Tampa YPG.
Hi, my name's Mark. I'm an alcoholic.
Mark.
I was kind of hoping this group shrank a little bit from the last time I was here. It has not. Thanks a lot for your talk, Ronnie. That was awesome. Relate a lot. I also especially love that you like dropped a dime on your mom right in front of me. That's great. We work an honest program here. A lot like you shared, I always felt kind of like awkward, and as a kid, like it didn't quite fit in, like I was a little bit of an outsider, and probably that kid that like was a little wound a little bit too tight, that could have used a drink long before I took one, and you know, just kind of like you shared, a little bit different. I started drinking when I was probably like 13, 14 years old. At least it's the first time I remember drinking. One of the first times I drank was like the summer. One of my cousins was in town, one of our older cousins let us stay at his house, and he and his wife, they bought us like a little bit of alcohol, and like just enough that we could get a buzz probably. I remember the next day, like I had a great time, and I remember the next day, he said to me, he's like, man, when we were drinking, he's like, you get like real like red in the face, you get flush, and you start to like break out. And I was like, huh, that's weird, I should probably drink more water or something, like, or drink something different. Like, there was never the thought that maybe I shouldn't drink, or maybe I should drink less. It was like, yeah, need to find a workaround for that. Like there was no thought of like I shouldn't do that again. Like I wanted to do that every chance I got, and that's pretty much how high school was for me. I mean, I did okay. I fell into a couple groups of friends, but I was always just sort of like the chameleon. I would just sort of like adapt, and I got along with everybody. I never really had issues, but I didn't want to stand out either. And every chance I got, you know, I would drink. Which was tough, because I looked like I was 12 until I was about 30, so. So fortunately, I had friends that were able to grow full beards when they were like 16, and they could buy beer at questionable gas stations, which was nice, or we would just steal it from our parents, and which we did that a lot too. My mom wasn't nice enough to buy alcohol for us. She was nice enough to look the other way, though, when we would like drink at the house. I grew up on like a little bit of land, and they would look the other way, which is kind of cool. So I somehow, you know, did okay in high school, managed to get into college. I grew up in Naples, a couple hours south on this coast, and went to USF at Tampa, and I managed to make it through, but you know, my drinking definitely picked up when I got to college. It was my idea of fun, and it's sort of where I probably started to really find the other people that drank the way I drink, you know, the other people that may or may not have a problem. I kind of idolize like those movies and like the stereotypical like, you know, drinking college movies like Animal House or like, you know, all that stuff. And I used to repeat this line like an idiot from Van Wilder, where he said in college a weekend starts on a Wednesday and ends on a Tuesday. I thought that was like the most clever thing ever, and I'm sure I spouted it out like every time I was drunk. No, it's okay, it's Wednesday, it's fine, I'm in college. So needless to say, it took me more than 4 years to graduate, but I did eventually, and you know, I think that my drinking started to get worse even after college. But outwardly, I was always worried about, I'm still to this day, it's one of my character defects, worried about what other people think of me. So I would always try to make it look like everything was okay on the outside. I fell into a career. I had a professional license and a degree that I scraped by and got. I bought a house when I was young. Of course, anybody could get a loan back then, so it's not that impressive. But, you know, outwardly, like, everything looked like it was all right, you know. And to the people I worked with, you know, they never saw me drinking. They never saw me drunk unless they happened to catch me out on a weekend. But, you know, now instead of, like, in college when I was in class all day and then at work until 11 or 12 at night, now I'm going out at like 8 or 9 o'clock on Thursday or Friday night with my friends, and we're still drinking till 3 or 4 in the morning. And then this amazing thing happened in Tampa, and they built a new Seminole Indian casino, the Hard Rock, and they served alcohol 24/7. So we could drink all night if we wanted to, which I thought that was amazing at the time, like a good alcoholic. And, you know, that's just kind of how my drinking went. And a lot of blacking out. A lot of blacking out, which is probably a blessing because I'm told I did a lot of dumb things when I drank. Made an ass of myself an awful lot. And that got progressively worse as time went on. And, you know, so more and more frequently as I got older and things started to change, like, it was less fun to be around me. Like, it was like spinning a wheel, like, maybe you'll get fun, Mark. Maybe you'll get, you know, passed out in the back seat. Maybe you'll get the Mark that tries to make out with your girlfriend. Who knows? It's a mixed bag with me. Yeah, that happened many times, unfortunately. I'm proud of that one. Usually not working, but the attempt. So, you know, that's sort of how it went. And in the end, it was getting worse. And people were starting to say things to me like, hey man, maybe you shouldn't drink so much, or maybe you should, you know, lay off a little bit, or maybe you should just drink beer. You know, those comments were starting to be made to me like more and more often. And I would shrug it off, and I would always point to the time where whoever was making the statement to me, I was like, well, remember 3 weeks ago when you threw up in the garbage can, or, you know, I would always find a reason to rationalize it. And when it got bad enough, I would just try to drink with people that drank like I did. So there's that. And but eventually, you know, it got pretty bad. And I remember that right before Gasparilla one year, I've tried to not tell this story too from the podium. And I get heckled if I don't, so I might get beat up later if I don't too. So I remember waking up that morning of Gasparilla with like this impending sense, what the big book calls like the impending sense of doom. And I just kind of shrugged it off. I was like, eh, it's fine, it's crazy. Because I'd had a bad weekend the weekend before, and people had made comments to me like, you know, one of those weekends where you look through your phone and look at your text messages and go, not good, or the call logs. And so that morning, I woke up and was going to meet up with some friends, and I remember I got up, you know, got ready, and then in my freezer there was a bottle of Captain Morgan, which was left over from New Year's. Another reason why I wasn't an alcoholic, because I could keep alcohol in my house and not drink it, because I didn't drink alone. It's totally justified. So I grabbed that, brought it with me, met up with them, we filled up some big gulps with, you know, a splash of Diet Pepsi and rum, and we walked along the parade route. The year before, I was on the Captain Morgan float with a bunch of friends and wasn't invited to return. I can't imagine why. So we had to wait for them to get off the float to meet up with them after the parade. And the last thing I remember is leaving a bar along the parade route, and I know we were going to another bar on the water. So the next thing I remember after that is being on the deck of a Marine Patrol boat in handcuffs. So what was later retold to me was that when we left that bar, we went to a bar at the bottom of the Marriott Waterside Hotel, and when we went to leave there, we were all pretty drunk, but I was obviously blackout, wasted, as usual. And they were trying to flag down a couple taxi cabs. Well, I'm kind of slippery sometimes when I'm drunk. And I snuck away and found my way to the boat docks, saw a boat with the keys in it, jumped in it, and took off. I like boats, I like the water, it makes sense, if you know me. So I jumped in this boat with the keys in it, took off. I don't know why, where I was going with it. I don't live anywhere near the water. I don't know how to hotwire a car, so keys were in it, naturally. But so I jumped in this boat, took off. Marine Patrol went to pull me over for some reason. Either no running lights and it was getting dark out, going too fast in a wake zone, probably all of the above. And I didn't stop. I tried to run. So they chased me. And being a big boating holiday, Coast Guard was out helping them patrol the water, so they had the faster boats, so they took over the chase. And when you try to run from the Coast Guard, they give you like one or two little warnings, and then they start shooting. So they did, and which I don't know what I was thinking. They were in a faster boat, so I guess I had like a fight or flight reaction, so I turned the boat at them like to ram them. And so this went on for like the better part of an hour. I know because I had to sit through the video that was filmed from a helicopter by the still standing sheriff of Hillsborough County. Thank God it was like infrared and not a good quality video. And I luckily didn't end up on like one of those world's dumbest police chase shows. It's already bad enough. If you Google my name, you'll see. It's hard to have a professional life sometimes. So that happened, and naturally that didn't end well. So eventually I gave up, and I, as a result of that, went to federal prison for 5 years. So, didn't end well. So, now I like to give out like a little disclaimer. That story isn't what makes me an alcoholic. What makes me an alcoholic is that even though I went to federal prison for 5 years as a result of a bad night of drinking, I still didn't think I was an alcoholic. I still tried to rationalize and justify and come up with all these reasons why it could have happened to anybody. Yeah, I know. I'm a delusional alcoholic. So I didn't drink for a while. I had a brief period. Well, I was incarcerated for like a year, and then they let me out for a little bit. And then I was sentenced, and then later went to prison. I didn't drink for that whole time, but I still wouldn't admit that I was an alcoholic. And when I was in prison, I was forced to take these drug and alcohol classes. And it wasn't AA, but there was some AA literature. And I was sort of nudged by the counselor to sort of like look at that. And I would always, always, always find the differences. I would always say, well, I never did that, or I didn't drink every day, or, you know, I would find anything to separate myself from anybody, you know, any reason that I would be an alcoholic. And I clung to this absurd thing that a psychologist who tried to defend me and like save my butt from going to prison said, and he said that I had an adverse reaction to alcohol, that basically that I had an allergy to alcohol. And I was like, oh, I'm not an alcoholic. I just, you know, my body reacts differently to alcohol. I have like an allergy. That's literally like the clinical definition of alcoholism. I'm so delusional that I like manipulated the clinical definition of alcoholism to convince myself I'm not an alcoholic. So, needless to say, I made it through just fine. I was never anywhere like super dangerous. And it was mostly really boring. But like a good alcoholic, I found like other things to like obsess over and like focus all my time on. I got in really good shape. That was nice, but nobody to really see it. So it's that. And that was pretty much gone after like a year. I was like, I have to hold down a job. So when I did get out, I remember the first time I had to meet with my probation officer, And like all through, like every time I'd like a little evaluation or whatever, there was always like special conditions of your probation, like no alcohol, no alcohol, no alcohol, no alcohol, no alcohol, no drinking, no drinking, no drinking, no alcohol. It's like, kind of makes sense. And then when I met with my probation officer for the first time, it's going through the conditions and it's, you know, like the Charlie Brown cartoons, wah, 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 wah. And then no alcohol to excess. I heard that part. I didn't react, at least that I think that he could see. I just sort of like, that means I can drink. I'm allowed to drink. I'm allowed to have alcohol. I just can't get caught drunk and I can't get a DUI. That's what that means. So I didn't drink right away. And some of my friends would, you know, say like, hey, when are you going to, are you going to try drinking again? Do you think you're ever going to drink again? Do you think you're an alcoholic? Of course I would say no. And I was like, well, I don't know. Maybe one day, I don't know. I'm just going to take it easy for right now. And eventually I did drink. And the first time I drank, boom, blackout, woke up in a bathtub. Should have been a sign. And that freaked me out, but not enough to make me admit that I was an alcoholic or stop drinking. I didn't drink for a while, but then I did drink again. And I tried these like absurd ways to drink like a normal person, or what I thought a normal, how I thought a normal person might drink, which is insane because a non-alcoholic doesn't have to try to not get drunk. And eventually I obviously did get drunk, and about 3 days before Christmas in 2013 I went to Ybor City with some friends, and I had two very clear choices to make that night. Some old friends that used to drink the way I drank but slowed down and, you know, moved on with their lives when I was away. They, you know, had families and continued on with their careers and grew up a little bit, whereas I suffered from arrested development, and I'm an alcoholic. I had the opportunity to go and spend an evening with them and, you know, be calm and whatever, or I could go with these other friends that had VIP passes to some club that I didn't care about, some DJ that I'd never heard of, but I could feel like a big shot, you know, drink for free, be in VIP section, whatever, so I chose that option. And I remember going out that night. And I drove, and I was like, well, I'm not going to drink tonight. I'm just going to go out and just hang out with everybody. And that went out the window the first time somebody offered to buy me a drink. And so, needless to say, I ended up blacking out, and I got a DUI that night. And what makes that even worse is that I got pulled over going the wrong way on I-4. So I could have been one of those wrong-way drivers that killed somebody. And that was right when that was starting to really happen a lot. Fortunately, it was like 5 o'clock in the morning and there was nobody out, and I got pulled over before that happened. So, and when I first like got sober, and I would try to justify the story, I'd be like, well, I probably just missed my exit to 75 on I-4. Like, it doesn't matter how I ended up going the wrong way, and I was going the wrong way on I-4. So that woke me up. That freaked me out a little bit. And my friends told me later that I told them I was going to my car to get my coat because I was going to take a taxi or an Uber or whatever home with them and just crash on the couch. And I lied to them, told them I was going to my car to get my coat, and they said they waited like 10, 15 minutes, called me, and they're like, where are you? What are you doing? I'm in my car, I'm on my way home. And they're like, you're an idiot, but just call us when you get home. Last night you made it home, okay. Yeah. Well, they never got that call. So they bailed me out, and I remember being in jail just thinking like, oh my God, how does this even happen? What is wrong with me? And I finally came to the realization that I'm an alcoholic. Like, this doesn't happen to normal people. Normal people don't get in trouble pretty much every time they drink. It's like that cliche that you hear a lot. Like, I didn't get in trouble every time I drank, but every time I had been in trouble, I had been drinking. And that is 100% true of my story. And so I finally was like, man, I've got to do something about this. Just as soon as I get out of prison in a few years. I was like, because there's no way I'm getting out of this one. And somehow I had a bond, because I was on federal probation at the time, and I was like, for a drinking charge. So I was like, there's no way that I'm going to have a bond. And I had a bond, and I remember like going and checking with like the deputy that was at the desk like every couple hours, like, hey, did my bond post? Am I out yet? And eventually I got released, and you know, ran out the door, and I was like, well, it's only going to be a couple days before I'm back. And So I talked to my friends and they're like, what are you gonna do? I was like, I think I need to get help. I think I am an alcoholic. They're like, yeah, maybe. So sure enough, I like a good criminal, I called my attorney right away. And they're like, God, you're a friggin' idiot, Mark. But come see us, we'll do what we can. And they're like, well, you gotta call probation. I'm like, yeah, I'm looking forward to this phone call. So I did, and they're like, okay. And I'd been on probation almost a year at this point, and they had actually just like stepped me down to like just whatever, just pay us the money you owe us and you'll be gone pretty soon. Like they were not worried about me. They're like, this guy's never gonna do anything again. And they were wrong. Surprisingly, when I did go to see them, they were they kind of looked at me like, what is wrong with you? Like, you were doing great, and then this. I was like, I think I might be an alcoholic. And the lady, who I'd never met before, because she wasn't my original probation officer, because they stepped me down, she's like, you think maybe there might be something there. I said, yeah, man, probably. So I was like, well, what are you doing about it? I was like, well, I started going to AA. She's like, that's a good idea. You should probably keep doing that. She's like, yeah, I think I need to. I was like, so what are you guys gonna do? And she's like, we don't know yet. We'll make that decision soon. I was like, okay. She's like, but we could send you to treatment. And I was like, I like that option. That sounds much better than the other thing. And she's like, well, we'll let you know. Okay, great. So that Monday after I was released from jail, I Googled Tampa AA, and there was a meeting, a men's meeting, right around the corner from where I lived, and right near this grocery store I used to work at when I was in college. And I was like, I know exactly where that church is. So I went, I showed up naturally like 2 seconds before the meeting started, and just ran in with my tail between my legs and sat down. And I obviously reeked of like newcomer, because everybody came over and talked to me. And I don't remember a thing that was said in that meeting, but everybody was super nice to me, welcoming, gave me numbers. I took like the where and when with everybody's name and number on it. And there was another meeting like the next night. I showed up to that. And what was great is I met my sponsor, actually, my first sponsor in that meeting, and several of the guys that like, kind of like picked me up and ran with me and carried me like in the beginning. And it was a great experience, and I was just terrified. In the beginning, I was just terrified. I didn't want to go back to prison, and I knew that if I drank again, like terrible things happen when I drink, and I just wanted to get as much sobriety and as much like AA and like recovery under my belt as I could before they sent me back, because like a good selfish and self-centered alcoholic, I was convinced that at any minute like flashbang grenades were gonna go off and like guys in like green army vests are gonna like come swinging in on ropes to come and get me anywhere and everywhere. And over a DUI and a misdemeanor DUI, and that never happened, thank God. And my probation officer let me sweat it out for like 6 months before they finally sent me to like an outpatient treatment center, which they actually paid for too, which was actually pretty great, because I was not in a great financial position coming out of prison and then first getting sober. So, but at that point in time, I already had like a pretty good foothold in sobriety. I was going to meetings all the time. And those guys that I met in that first meeting, they just like picked me up and ran with me. And like right after Christmas, when I came back to Tampa and talked to my sponsor, like for the first time in depth, and like he became my sponsor, he and my grand sponsor at the time, they were like, hey, Thursday, there's this, this meeting that's our home group. It's the young people's group. And I was like, there's like different kinds of groups, like, yeah, it's young people's group, you should come with us, we'll pick you up. I was like, okay, that sounds cool, that sounds like fun, actually. Like, there's a lot of hot girls here. I'm like, that sounds even better, I want to go to that now even more. And they did, and that became my home group, not just because of that, although that didn't hurt in the beginning. I met a ton of people that are my friends to this day, people that, they didn't care that I was totally out of my mind crazy, and that they loved me even though I was nuts and thought I was going back to prison, although you could see where there's some risk there. They picked me up and carried me and showed me how to do AA, and they pushed me into service, and They took me to meetings every day, and my sponsor would my license was suspended at the time. I had a hardship license, and I would come home from work, and he'd come pulling up, and I'd jump in his car with him, and he would just talk to me, and just we'd go to meetings, we'd hang out with a bunch of other alcoholics, and he would just keep me occupied in the beginning when I was just totally nuts. And he would just talk about his crazy, and that's what I needed at the time. And you know, I look back on it and I'm super grateful. And you know, I'm convinced that I probably wouldn't have stuck around in the beginning if I hadn't had like that serious fear, like that real risk of like, I'm probably going to prison, like you really screwed up this time, like again. And like, I think that I needed that like fire under my butt to stick around, to like really get this and grasp it. And you know, that was a big part of it. And you know, today things are very different. You know, I've been sober since December 23rd, 2013, and I've never been dry or even remotely close to sober this long since I picked up my first drink. And a lot of that is because that's all because of AA. And you know, I'm fortunate that today that you know, I get to be active. I have a home group. I have a sponsor. I have guys that actually want me to sponsor them. Poor bastards. And you know, it's great. You know, every day isn't sunshine and rainbows. You know, I mean, you know, today was a great day, even though I was a little nervous coming here. But yeah, I mean, if you ask me that on another day, I might not say the same thing. But you know, because of this, I have a way to deal with life. You know, I can live life on life's terms. I have people. I have a support group. You know, people that I can talk to and go to with things. You know, because I'm a crazy, selfish, and self-centered alcoholic. I'm delusional, as I've clearly pointed out. I can rationalize anything, and that will get me drunk, you know. So it's important that I have people to run things by. And I'm lucky that I get to sponsor, too, because, you know, I see my character defects in my sponsees, and, you know, and they're good to point out mine when I'm, you know, not paying attention to. And, you know, it's a great feeling, and you know, that's it's just what an amazing thing. And I really, really, really appreciate you guys asking me to come here and speak. This is one of the first meetings I ever traveled to with my sponsor, and we used to do the speaker swap a lot with you guys, and kind of miss that. And you know, this is a great experience, and I'm kind of running out of steam here, so I think I'm going to end. But thank you guys.